This is Jerry Bingham, host of Hush Loudly on WGN Plus.
Recognize that your introversion is a superpower and not a weakness, right? I think that shift in mindset would help you be able to show up as your best self in the interview or at a new job, and also leaning into your superpowers to be able to be successful.
Hi, this is Gina Quagg, co-host of the podcast HR Unconfidential.
Hi, and this is Taria Gray, the other host of HR Unconfidential, and you're listening to Hush Loudly on WGN.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Hush Loudly with your host, Jerry Bingham. And as always, I have some amazing guests, but this is a first because we have two joining at the same time. So we've got a triple threat here of me along with Taria Gray and with Gina Flagg. Say hi, ladies. Welcome to Hush Loudly.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
So I met Taria, and I'll just tell the story briefly. A member of my team, a very valuable member of my team, said, "You have to meet Taria. She's my neighbor, and she's an introvert, and she was going to listen to your podcast, and you have to meet her, and she's so nice, and she's so cool." And I was like, okay, yes. And then the magic happened. She connected us, and I was invited to be a guest on their podcast, HR Unconfidential, which is a must. Ladies, I am listening. You know who I'm in love with, and now I'm not going to think of his name. The CIA guy? The guy? Is it the CIA? Oh my God.
And I, you hear me ask him to adopt me on that episode?
Yes.
I'm like, I need you in my life permanently.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Take care of me.
And I'm claiming him as an introvert. I don't know if he is or not, but I'm just claiming that he is. I just enjoyed that episode so much, you know, so I had to be a fan of your show. But I invited you to the show because both of you have very strong executive level careers. You're in HR. You are chief people officers. You're HR executives. And that is, of course, so vital. I think one of the most vital departments in any institution, corporation, company. And I always think it's the toughest job. I really, really do, because you are peopling and dealing with people all day. People mm-hmm. who are normal like us and people who are not normal, or people who are upset. People, you're dealing with all of it. And I always just give props to HR professionals. I'm so serious about that. And with the job market, with all of the shifts, everything that's happening in our world, you know, people are looking for jobs, or even people in their current jobs may be unhappy with the culture. And I feel like HR is where the magic happens, because this is the group that can kind of lead the charge and really bring forth change in an organization. And so that is why you two are here. And I have a couple questions, but I think we'll probably get off topic. I don't know. So thinking about on the talent acquisition side, as HR execs who have worked with both introverts and extroverts, because half the world is introverted, and even depending on what kind of company, you may have heavy extroverts, you may have heavy introverts, it doesn't matter, but you are working with mm-hmm. both. Do you always know what you're looking for in advance for a candidate? So when you have the job description, you're working with the hiring manager, do you know in your mind, I need this type of person, and you go in that way? Or are you more on the side of that's it when you see it? And each of you can talk, or one or whatever. We're open, just having a conversation. What do you think about that?
I'll start, and Gina, please jump in. I think the answer to your question is, in theory, yes. You know, any somewhat functioning organization has a job description and some type of point of view on the type of skill that they are looking to bring in. But my honest answer is that in practice, that does sometimes go out the window, where, you know, hiring managers or teams have this "I'll know it when I see it" type of approach as candidates start to kind of roll in. And that's not always bad. Sometimes you meet candidates that bring skill sets or capabilities that you hadn't even thought about before. And as long as you're taking a step back to kind of rethink what it is that the role actually requires and what the business needs, and anchoring yourself in that versus on the individual, then it's okay to kind of learn what you need as you go. But unfortunately, I will say, you know, the reality is a lot of folks go in with this, I'll just know it when I see it, kind of very vague point of view of what they're going to use to hire someone. And Gina, I don't know if that's been your experience as well.
Yes, I completely agree. And I would just add, at any talent experience, whether it's talent acquisition and hiring or someone later in the organization, those processes are full of biases, and we all have them, including hiring managers and HR people. Yeah. And sometimes that's hard for the candidates, right? Because we don't say, oh, these are my biases as you walk into something. But that's, I think that's true. And that's where I think all of us can be kind of on alert, especially from a candidate perspective, to just pay attention and read the room if that's happening.
Does it matter if you are, I know you all are big on the corporate side. I don't know if you can mention the names of the companies, but does it matter if it's a corporate environment or a nonprofit or higher ed? Do you know if it changes for each sort of industry?
So I've worked at large publicly traded companies with upwards of 50,000 employees, and I also have worked at a small 70-person nonprofit. And the best practices in how teams should approach hiring and recruiting and the risk of biases that Gina has mentioned, I think exist across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's key differences based on industry or company size.
I would agree. I think that part of the piece around being in a corporate environment is that there, when we interview people, they more likely have access to the senior leaders, and senior leaders have expectations of how people are, how they behave, how they present themselves. So I think that's another just element to consider when we think about candidates who are interacting with executive mm-hmm. leaders.
I will also say in smaller companies, I have found there's more of an appetite to openly kind of work through what the recruiting process might look like. Sometimes when you join these big, large corporations, there's so many cooks in the kitchen, for lack of a better term, and they've got all these processes and, you know, recruiting teams and large hiring teams, or there's just many more people to wrangle. I have found that smaller companies that are open to learning and growing, and particularly in the nonprofit space or like mission-driven organizations, are much more willing to evolve or adapt their processes when they recognize that something is not working, because there's just not as much red tape or inherent things that have to be undone.
Yes. And that question kind of leads to the next one a little bit, where I'm always, and, you know, loving on my introverted brothers and sisters and trying to lift them up and support them when we are interviewing, because we know that some of us don't have the charisma that our extroverted brothers and sisters have. Some of our extroverted brothers and sisters have charisma. They have the gift of gab. They have it. And there may be little to no substance, but they got the gift of gab, and it gets them in the door mm-hmm. and it might get them the job. Mm-hmm. And then how do we prepare ourselves when some of us may have it, but some of us may not, but we have substance and we have so much value to add and to bring, and we are interested in this company. We've done our research. We want to be there. Have you had situations where, say, the hiring manager is in love with the charismatic person, and you as the HR executive are like, I like candidate B better? And have you won that, or what has happened in that situation if you've experienced that?
Gina, you want to go? I've certainly experienced it and can talk about it, but you want to jump in?
My answer is all the time. I've experienced it all the time. And yes. And those are the most challenging opportunities, because I think as HR people, we tend to say, let's go back to the job description, what's the opportunity for this job, things like that. I just wrote down, as you were talking, Jerry, the counsel that I normally give is be you, and I might whisper in the ear of the candidate to say, I need you to say things like, I want this job.
Hmm.
And so I coach the candidate to say some things that the person is looking for extroversion will calm their body down when they hear it. So that's been my approach, but it happens literally all the time.
Wow. Well, thank you for being an ally and an advocate for us, Gina.
Absolutely. Taria, how about you? I have absolutely experienced that we kind of get shiny object syndrome when the person who has the gift of gab is in front of us, and we start anchoring ourselves on all the things that Gina said before, just the biases of like, oh, I can see myself working with them, or they were so cool and charismatic. I would say it starts with, and I've been, you know, as someone who's led HR teams, this is where I think HR people have the most influence on this, is if you are thoughtful about how you design the recruitment process, there's more ways for you to influence that experience. So like for me, step one is how transparent are you with candidates about what their interview process is going to entail? Because a lot of introverts, and maybe even some extroverts or even anybody in between, they benefit from, you know, kind of information in advance on who they're going to be meeting with, what they can expect, what type of interview is it? Are you requiring like case studies or work products? So as much as you can help people prepare, but also I've worked at companies where the interviewing teams are not really challenged, or there's not structure built in on how they debrief or score candidates. It's like everybody sits down and talks to this person and share their feedback in these very random or disparate ways, and there's never really thoughtful conversation. So something as simple as if you're a recruiter or you manage a recruiting function, have debriefs, have group debriefs, train interview team members in advance on how to spot some of these biases and on what productive or healthy pushback might look like so that it's not groupthink. Create interview guides that can be a general framework for how they go into the interviews, because we all have that hiring manager that goes into a room and is like, tell me your favorite movie. And they connect on these very random, yes, non-job related factors, yes, that would give that candidate the leg up. And we want to try to minimize that. But also, a lot of the technology nowadays that people use for recruiting have built-in ways for you to capture very specific feedback from interview teams, where general blanket statements like, they just were really cool, or I see them as being a great culture fit, kind of don't cut it. So I would say leverage the technology you have that kind of forces more thoughtful conversations and feedback, and absolutely whisper in the ear of the talented folks that you know can show up really well in the interview and make sure that they feel set up for success. So I've done that as well, Gina.
That's so good to hear. And I think I would say, although you two are stellar, I would believe that there are probably other really talented and experienced HR leads who do the same thing, or who recognize, hey, this may be the way we need to go, and let's bring some things to the attention of the hiring manager and have him think, or her think about it differently, and not think about, oh, they'd be cool, you know, they'd fit in. And it's deeper than that. It's supposed to be about the position and the role. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I believe most HR folks should be thinking that way. And that's definitely my experience. But I do think the challenge for HR folks is at the end of the day, we're not the decision maker, right? And so as much as we have a great process and we push back, there are those times where we have leaders that make decisions that we don't agree with. And that's, I think, both Gina and I carry a position of like leadership courage and kind of name it in a very open way when we see that happening. And I also am a fan of I told you so. 6 months later, when that person who you were so excited about because of their gift of gab is not performing great, I am the leader that will say, huh, I think I told you this 6 months ago. And then we try to move on from there to make everything better. So name them, shame them, and say I told you so.
I love that. We need to put that on a billboard or something and identify you as that, with that quote. I love that. And let me ask you, Taria, as an introvert, I didn't really ask because we've already discussed this. Taria is an introvert, and Gina, we were talking about it, but we think she's more extroverted. So we'll say she's probably in the middle because she has kind of both sides, or uses both sides. So this question is for Taria. Well, actually, I'll ask both of you. But Taria, as I talked about earlier, in your your roles. You know, all you do is people. All you do is manage people problems and people internally. So whether it's the CEO that you're working for, people externally in terms of talent acquisition, people that are there in the building that are all over the place, you know, virtual, you are in charge of all that. And as an introvert, where we usually need to recharge and reset a few times during the day because it just helps us regroup, it helps with our nervous system, we get back our regulation. How do you manage all of that? Do you have any strategies that help you throughout the day if you have a day full of meetings or a week full of meetings and trainings and stuff like that?
That's a good question. First, I'm going to just explain to your listeners how much of an introvert I am. I just took quick inventory of my work from home wardrobe over the past 3 days. Today, I have on a t-shirt that says it's way too people-y outside. Yesterday, I had on a t-shirt that said indoorsy instead of outdoorsy. And the day before that, I had on a t-shirt that simply said overstimulated. So
love it.
This is a lifestyle that I have embraced.
Love it.
So I guess the first thing I'll say is, like, people assume that HR is for extroverts because we have to be so people-facing. So I understand the irony of myself having had a 20 plus year HR career. But I think about it as, like, HR done well really taps into all of the natural strengths that I think introverts bring. And you've talked about this, Jerry, and, you know, things like listening, observation, pattern recognition, thoughtful problem solving. So I think my introversion has helped me be successful in my profession. That's not to say that extroverts can't be very, very successful HR people. But when I think about what HR really requires and what skills are needed to make a real impact on a company, I think a lot of introverts naturally have those skills. Some things that I do is, you know, I kind of batch my peopling time. You know, I've gotten to a point in my career where I can mostly manage my schedule and own my meetings. And so things like batching certain meetings on certain days or times of day and blocking out time for work and heads down time on my calendar are all very basic strategies. I do asynchronous communication as much as possible. You know, I am at a point in my career where, again, I can kind of sit in a meeting and say, did we need 20 of us here? Like, this could have been an email or a shared document that we're working on. And so as much as I can do that, I think there is a perception of HR that has pros and cons and works in my benefit as an introvert. And that is kind of how we are expected to show up socially at work. And where I say there's a perception of HR that works sometime in my favor is, you know, sometimes people don't see HR as fun. They don't see us as the safe space or the place to kind of let your hair down. So nobody cares if I don't come to the company party mm-hmm. because good. I'm viewed as the fun police. And so I opt mm-hmm. out of social events, and my feelings are not hurt when people are like, when people say HR is not your friend, or like, here comes HR, let's not have fun at the company picnic anymore. I'm like, you know what? You don't have to worry about me because I'd rather be at home anyway. So
right.
I've gotten very comfortable with opting out of social events or leaving early or managing kind of my time at some of those things. And then when it's been a long, rough day, I think I do a lot of the what I call recovery practices that you mentioned. You know, I recharge in silence. I go for walks. I light candles. You know, again, mostly I work remote, so I have the benefit of being able to just take a 5 or 10 minute breather, even if I am in a day of back-to-back meetings. Gina and I met at a job that we worked at together over a decade ago now, and I would routinely step in her office and say, like, I just need to go sit in the car, like literally just physically leave the building. Mm-hmm. And she was my partner in crime when it came to that. Like, we just need to go through the Starbucks drive-thru, get some fresh air and quiet. And sometimes we would schedule cries. Like, I literally will schedule a time and just go, like, take a deep breath and cry because mm-hmm. people have been in my face too much.
Yes.
And so I think all of the things that a lot of introverts have probably been told to do are things that work out for me.
Love that. And what about you, Gina? The peopling.
I love hearing Taria talk about kind of her experience. She and I can be a yin and a yang. I'm definitely more extroverted than my friend Taria. And I also, through working in HR, there's a lot of people, a lot of things going on. And so I know that many times I've had a commute. So my commute has allowed me some downtime to reset. And the other thing, I've worked with client groups who, I'm going to say something very stereotypical. Some client groups are more extroverted and introverted. My salespeople can be more extroverted, and my engineering and finance people can be more introverted. Mm-hmm. So I have definitely taken a step back and given other people time because I know they're processors. That's my shorthand for some of the introverts. And so I know that I have definitely adjusted myself because I can definitely dial myself up to high extrovert, and I know I need to dial myself down depending on who I'm with.
Okay. And I want to go back to something that Taria mentioned about, you know, she's at the point where she, in her career, where she can kind of opt out. And it made me think of events. It made me think of there is someone on the air in Chicago, a television news personality that we all know who I am connected to. And I asked her to be a guest on my show. And she said, I would love to, but it would destroy my career. She said it would be almost like career. She said, I think it would almost be like career suicide because I think people would look at me differently, not the viewers, but my bosses. And it would be like, well, she said, I think I couldn't use the excuse of my kids. I couldn't use the excuse of my mom because people would automatically just assume she's an introvert and she doesn't want to come. And she just said, I think that it would just be used against me if I said no to anything or if I was questioning something. I think it would be used against me. And here's what's scary. Another person told me this at another television station. Now, she was not an on-air personality, but she was community something something. And she's now moved to a different state. But she told me the same thing because she was in a big role.
So not even in like a public facing role.
Not even in a public facing role. She was in a big role at her studio. And she said, I can't. She said it would work against me. And I was like, oh, my God, I hate that. I hate that the stigma is still that strong because I think TV news is supposed to be extroverted, you know. But here are two introverts that are really making things happen, but they are afraid to sort of, quote, come out. And then that leads to my next question about, and I have my opinion on this, but I'll let you speak first. Do you think we're at a place where you could say, hey, I'm an introvert, you know, so I'm applying for this role? Or if I'm already there, I've gotten the role, and I say, maybe I'm in leadership, and I say, hey, everybody, I'm an introvert. So this explains why I don't want to hang out with you at the water cooler. I don't want to go out to lunch with you. I don't want to have cake in the thing at 3 o'clock, and I don't want to do that. Do you think we're at a place now where we can do that?
No, not quite. And, you know, I think there's some things that have happened, right? Like, I think the last 5 or 6 years, especially if people have been working remotely or hybrid, it's kind of normalized different working styles and the whole how active you are at the water cooler or how much you go to lunch and things like that has become a little bit less of a factor for people who maybe are working remote or hybrid. I think for organizations that have chosen to kind of care about DEI and equity and inclusion in the workplace, they may have a little bit more of a evolved point of view about people's different, you know, working styles, communication styles, and things like that. I also think for the first time ever, we've got every kind of living generation in the workplace together right now. And I think younger generations are just a lot more comfortable maybe naming their needs and boundaries, even if they don't use the word introvert or extrovert. So I think those things are maybe inching us to the right direction. But I think the reality is that most workplaces and social interactions are designed for extroverts, and you kind of stick out like a sore thumb if you don't adapt to that. And I think it is exacerbated for people of marginalized groups because you're already othered, and there people across various both gender and mostly gender and racial identities don't get a lot of the grace around, you know, how they make decisions. And so the example you shared, you know, the default
for myself as a Black woman opting out of certain social constructs at work, the default isn't going to be, oh, well, maybe she's tired, or right? Like, they don't lead with grace and understanding. It's, she's not a team player, or she's difficult, or I've said as an HR executive in discussions about performance or talent, and people say things like, well, we don't really know her.
Yeah.
We don't know much about her, and like these very kind of bias coded ways that folks are being evaluated. So I don't think we're there yet. I think on a case by case basis, folks have to kind of read the culture and the environment and the level of safety that they feel in their workplace around how they navigate things like that.
Thank you. I agree. Gina, did you have anything to add?
Teria said it perfectly.
She did, didn't she?
I agree.
She did.
Yep.
And I want to ask this last question. I want to start with Gina, because Gina already said something about being you. I want some advice from you two who have seen everything and have worked all over the place and knowing what you know about introversion. Is there any advice you could give to introverts? And it could be anything from the application recruitment phase to when you're in that job in the first 60 to 90 days. Any advice that you have for our introverts?
So a couple of things. One is, you said it, the world is designed to support more extroversion than introversion. So I'll say that out loud. And I would say every candidate needs to read the room and adjust a bit. And so from an energy management standpoint and for wanting people to get jobs, find out where those key opportunities are that you might need to flex more toward extroversion just to be in the game. I'm not saying you should be, you know, pretend that you're extroverted the whole time, but there may be some things you say. There may be, you know, there might be slight adjustments you can make just to keep yourself in the quote candidate pool. But I don't want anybody to change who they are. But just to be mindful that the world is not designed for introverts. And so there's going to be opportunities for flex, and think about where those opportunities are and lean into them a little bit.
And that's real talk. Even how you had said earlier, I want this job. You know, that could be meaningful just saying those four words, I want this job. And what about you, Teria?
I would, you know, plus everything Gina said, I think some other tactical things or just general thoughts I have is, one, recognize that your introversion is a superpower and not a weakness, right? I think that shift in mindset would help you kind of be able to show up as your best self in the interview or at a new job, and also make those necessary kind of adjustments like Gina described. You're not covering up weaknesses. You're not faking extroversion to kind of like please the man. You're leaning into your superpowers while also being mindful of the environment that you're in to be able to be successful. So I would say, just from a mindset standpoint, that would be a tip. I would also say, like, introverts are like, we're master preparers. And so heading into an interview, the research that you do, the way that you think about how you might articulate your skills and accomplishments and the way you communicate those strengths and plan your day if you're heading into an interview process to make sure that your energy is managed and you're not depleted kind of going into the interview setting. Those are all skills that I would say you lean into and tap into as you're planning to participate in an interview. And that first 90 days on a job is going to test your or stretch you into your extroversion, because you're going to be meeting people and having conversations with new colleagues and things like that. But again, there's an element of control that you can have in how you show up in those things. And again, anchor on your superpowers, which are, again, critical thinking, pattern recognition, being very focused and being a great listener. I think all of those skills are things that are going to help you get up to speed a lot more quickly in your new role and be able to kind of show your team and the company that hired you why you were the right decision. So I guess my tagline is, it's a superpower, not a weakness you have to overcome, and find ways to adjust in ways that can help to set you up for success.
That was awesome. Thank you, ladies, so much. This is such a powerful episode. And I'd like for you to tell us how listeners can find you, and tell us a little bit about the podcast.
So as Jerry mentioned, Gina and I are the co-hosts of a podcast called HR Unconfidential. It's been running since 2018, so almost 8 years now. And Jerry was on our January episode. So if you want to check that out, feel free to go to hrunconfidential.com or wherever you get podcasts and listen to Jerry on our January episode. HR Unconfidential has a LinkedIn page where you can go and follow us. You can email us at info@hrunconfidential.com. Both Gina and I are frequently kind of posting about episodes on LinkedIn and also engaging with listeners and supporters on LinkedIn when we're looking for guests or just want to hear from folks about potential topics. So I would welcome anybody to kind of find us. I'm assuming you can link to our LinkedIn profiles and our bios.
Yes.
When this episode is released, and we're always looking to make new friends, although my introversion is like, I'm okay with like digital friends, so don't take care.
We get it. Friendship is friendship.
Reach out. Yeah, and our podcast, again, I guess the sentence, and Gina, you can jump in here, is we are two career-long HR executives that have strong points of view and a passion on how we can make the workplace work for everyone and the role that HR folks can play. And so we started the podcast 8 years ago to kind of just have unfiltered real talk about life in the workplace and kind of what happens behind the scenes and pull the curtain back a little bit for, you know, non-HR folks that are just trying to navigate the day-to-day life of work, which is why it's called HR Unconfidential.
Thank you so much, Taria Gray and Gina Flagg of HR Unconfidential. And we will be following you and listening to you. But thank you for all the advice and love that you gave to introverts today.
Thank you for having us. It's been amazing.
Enjoying Hush Loudly? Please subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to us. Did you know Hush Loudly has t-shirts? Yep, show the world you're an introvert without saying a word. We also have t-shirts for the extroverts in our lives who need us. Go to hushloudly.com/shop.